Podcasting from the beautiful San Francisco Bay Area in California, this is Venus Rising, where we discuss all things related to big fertility and encourage you to think beyond the masses. I'm Callie Fell, your host, bringing you the best and most up-to-date conversations on fertility, infertility, and women's reproductive health. Hello, and welcome back to Venus Rising. With me today is Dr. Susan Caldwell, a primary care physician specializing in women's health. She practices in New Orleans, Louisiana. Dr. Caldwell received her medical degree from Louisiana State University Health Sciences Center, where she also completed her residency in internal medicine and pediatrics. In 2016, she became a certified NAPRO Technology Medical Consultant. She enjoys writing and speaking about authentic femininity and reproductive health that upholds the dignity of all human life. She blogs about topics in women's health at drsusancaldwell.com and is a proud mother of three children. Thank you so much for joining me today and taking the time out of your very busy schedule to join us on Venus Rising.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you for having me.
I am glad that you responded to my email. To give a little background, I reached out to Dr. Caldwell after stumbling across an article that you wrote way back in 2016 with the title, I Have Children Thanks to IVF, But Here's Why I Would Never Ever Recommend It. I'd just like to jump right in if we could and start by traveling back in time and talk about this article and your personal story that you highlight in the article. Do you mind?
Sure. Yes. So my twins are now 21. So that's a
lot. Wow.
So yeah. I've grown and I've changed and I've learned a lot. And I think that was the impetus for the article that, through my experience of IVF as a patient, I was in med school at the time. I was really, I really had a positive experience on one hand because of, I have three children, but a very negative experience on the other hand, because of some, side effects that I experienced and some dangers and just, it was a rocky road. And so I just think that I just want to make people aware of it, because I think that the most women who struggle with infertility, are kind of quickly offered IVF without an adequate explanation of the risks and the pitfalls. But mostly why I really feel passionate about speaking out on this is because we have something so much better that is so much more gentle and really in keeping with really the idea of do no harm, right? The idea of when a doctor applies a medical treatment to someone, we really don't want to hurt anyone. We want to help them to achieve health. And when it comes to fertility, we know that fertility is not a disease in itself. It's simply a symptom of an underlying disease. So when we focus simply on getting a woman pregnant, which IVF really does, it often fails to honor her as a person, her own individual story, her symptoms, and it overlooks what's really wrong with her and tries to just get the quick fix of a pregnancy, which often doesn't work. It's not a very effective technology. So we have better options, less invasive, less harmful, less, so that's why I think it's important to talk about this.
Sure. I appreciate that. And I want to jump ahead a little bit because you mentioned it there in this brief introduction this brief time that we've been talking. Your blog is very informative, and we'll include that in the introduction when we publish the podcast. But just for our listeners, it's drsusancaldwell.com. And I found an article where you talk about infertility as a symptom rather than a disease, just what you just said. Could you unwrap that a little bit more for us?
So just maybe using myself as an example, I used birth, like many women, we often take for granted our fertility, and we often use contraception to avoid having kids, which is, it's a good thing to have a responsible decision to have kids when it's a good time for you. But many women end up having trouble getting pregnant and they don't know why. Okay. So first of all, it's often, again, we've kind of imposed infertility upon ourselves by taking birth control. This is just the most women are on some sort of hormonal birth control, like I was. And so I wanted to then achieve pregnancy. So I stopped using birth control and waited for my body to magically start working again and ovulating, which really didn't happen very well, very quickly. So, and then the women I see, often I see them after a year or more of trying to conceive, and they don't know anything about their body. But most of them, in addition to not being able to get pregnant, they don't feel well. They might have problems with irregular cycles, heavy bleeding, painful bleeding, PMS. They might have symptoms of polycystic ovarian syndrome, a lot of symptoms in addition to the infertility. And so when these women go to a fertility clinic right away, most of their OBs might try a couple of rounds of Clomid, some Clomid or letrozole, these fertility stimulating drugs. And if that doesn't work, they send them to the IVF doctor. And the IVF doctor usually doesn't do a very thorough investigation. Sometimes they do. There are those IVF doctors like mine did a surgery and found I had endometriosis, for example. But most of them do not. And the woman deserves that. She deserves to know what's wrong. For example, I had a patient who had been through multiple rounds of IVF. She had a child from a previous, I believe before IVF, she had had a child naturally. And she came into our system, the Creighton Model Fertility Care System. And we simply, I just remember talking to her about her cycles. I take a very complete history when I meet a woman, because that's where we learn the little red flags that these symptoms that kind of tell me what could be the problem. And she was just sharing some things. And she, when I asked her these questions, said, okay, so how long are your cycles? What are your cycles like? How many days do you bleed? And she said, I have no idea. Like every cycle that I've been on, had has been manipulated by either birth control or IVF drugs. So she didn't even know her body. So she was able to get pregnant within 6 months of using the Creighton Model system simply by learning the we teach a woman how to pay attention to what we call the biomarkers, the important little details of her cycle, using a mucus observation method where she just simply watches her mucus and her vaginal discharge as she's going to the bathroom all day and makes a record of that, brings it to her fertility care practitioner who's knowledgeable. Then the fertility care practitioner will send them to me if there's a problem. But this particular woman got pregnant with just a little bit of a supplement to help her mucus to be so healthier. So my point is that IVF just doesn't look at those little details. And it's often, the solution is often pretty simple. Often, and sometimes not, but often there might be a little thyroid disorder. There might be a problem the front half of the cycle, which we call the follicular phase, where she might need a little bit of an ovulation boosting help. At the back end of the cycle, we call the luteal phase. Many, many women have trouble making enough progesterone to prepare the lining for implantation. That's super easy to diagnose and treat using a system like Creighton Model. And then again, we look at all kinds of things. Is she anemic? Is she deficient in vitamin D? Sometimes we look at an MTHFR defect. There's so many things. One of my favorite things to treat is recurrent miscarriages, because these women are often abandoned by the OBGYN world because they don't know what to do for these women. They'll send them to the IVF clinic, but the IVF clinic often tells them, oh, okay, well, you need IVF, when the problem is not getting pregnant.
It's maintaining those pregnancies.
So many people, women here and couples are just abandoned by the system that doesn't know how to recognize the individual needs of the woman and ends up kind of doing this one size fits all. Let's put these people on the IVF, treadmill or whatever you want to call it. And they end up getting kind of the same one size fits all treatment. And in my case, we can go over that later. But in my case, that treatment was way more than my body could handle. And I ended up with a major reaction to it. But there's no way to tell these women apart. So I just think I had a very severe, invasive treatment for something that probably could have been treated in a much more gentle way.
Sure. And you touched on so many things that I want to unpack and ask you about. But I was talking with someone recently about that, about how these women who have miscarriages are kind of abandoned and forgotten, and not just by care providers, but I think just as a society as a whole, you know, our culture doesn't know how to deal with that kind of loss. And we don't know how to deal with helping women like that and supporting and surrounding rather than, you know, so I think you touched on a lot of things and there's so much to unpack, but for the sake of our listeners, let's talk about like this NAPRO technology and this Creighton model. This isn't the first time that we've actually talked about this on Venus Rising, but for listeners who may have not heard, we had Dr. Naomi Whitaker on the show, and she also specializes in these two things in, I believe, Pennsylvania. But for listeners who may have not listened to her, could you talk more about the NAPRO technology and what it means to be a certified NAPRO technology medical consultant? Because it sounds like this is a different avenue, so to speak, than going to a fertility clinic. And so I don't think before hearing from Naomi that I knew that this existed. So can you talk a little bit more and unpack those terms and what that looks like if someone came to you with issues?
So NAPRO technology is short for natural procreative technology, which is really in opposition to, or it stands opposed to, what you might call artificial reproductive technology. So in the IVF world, the idea is to not respect the woman's natural underlying cycles of ovulation, to just throw that aside. So that's where the artificial piece comes from. In other words, we're going to create our own cycle. We don't want to listen to the body of the woman. The body of the woman is kind of put aside or dismissed by birth control, often in the cycle before an IVF, because they want to shut down everything that the woman's body's trying to do naturally and artificially recreate a cycle for that woman with these drugs. And so it's all about then reproduction is just kind of almost like this animalistic way to create life, right? So whatever that those words connote for everyone, that's just kind of, it sounds kind of cold, sounds kind of manipulative. And as you know, someone who's gone through it, and also as someone who listens to many women who have been down that road, that is the overriding, I think, sentiment that most women who've been through that feel. They just feel like it was cold. It was not natural. So then we have something called NAPRO technology, which I learned about 10 years after my kids were born. And I was floored when I heard that there was a way of treating women with infertility that would kind of be attentive and listen to what her struggle was, knowing that every woman has a particular struggle that's different than anybody else's. And that woman would be then, whatever the testing or the treatment would be tailored to her and her needs and her desires, whatever that might be. And so, yeah, NAPRO technology also serves women who are not trying to get pregnant, who are trying. So any woman who's having trouble with her cycles, who's trying to avoid pregnancy. There are women who are just having really bad symptoms with their periods, and they're nowhere near wanting to be a mother. They just feel bad. So NAPRO technology is really an inclusive kind of space where people can be heard and healed through, you know, very good science, really. It's yeah, really good science. And so we stress the natural aspects of it. NAPRO, the procreative, it's a beautiful kind of, we're pro-life, right? We're pro-creating life, but we want it to be natural.
Right.
Because a woman's body and a man's body have what they need. Technically, they were created in such a way that they would be able to reproduce and procreate. Okay. So what we want to do is we want to see what's good about how their bodies are working and not throw it away and try to recreate something, but just to use what's already there and what is already healthy, and then to kind of discern out, okay, these things are not healthy, and then we help them to be healthy so that fertility can be achieved naturally through the embrace of a man and a woman, a husband and a wife.
Mm-hmm. And it sounds like once you kind of diagnose the problem, then the symptom of infertility should go away.
Exactly, exactly. But the really the foundation of the NAPRO technology system is what's called the Creighton Model Fertility Care System, which is a way of a standardized way that a woman would know the signs of her body and put that in a language that is a standardized language that the woman would understand, the doctor understands, and her fertility care practitioner who would be teaching her the method would understand. And so now when I look at this chart that has all of this information, all this data on it, it in a way, it reminds me of when I'm looking at an EKG in a patient who has heart disease or has a problem with their heart, chest pain. I can look at the EKG and I see all of this data. It means something. Right. But the difference here is that an EKG can't be read by the patient.
Right.
Whereas this Creighton chart can be read by the patient. So she's got in her hand a record of her reproductive health, which is really just a mirror of her overall health as a woman.
Sure. And it enables her, right? Like it gives a woman, you know, I'm so amazed sometimes you hit on this about how ill-informed or uninformed or unknowing women are about our own bodies. And I don't know if that's the educational, I don't know what, that we could probably talk about that forever, what causes that. But so this seems like it's like a tool, right? That helps women get to know their bodies.
Yes. And what we find, it's so funny when we have, we've talked to OBGYNs who have come into this method for their own health or because they're trying to change their practice and they're trying to learn about it. And they're floored by what they learn about their bodies and the bodies of their patients they never knew before.
Yeah, that's cool. That's really cool. I'm a labor and delivery nurse as well. And so I do see this and it's funny. My favorite, I guess, thing that we laugh about, and maybe this is too much, but is I'll put in a catheter for a woman who might have had an epidural and they're concerned about it being the same space that the baby comes from. And so that's like one of the biggest misnomers. I'm always educating my patients when it's time for a catheter, but I digress.
Yeah.
Why don't you think in this age of like organic food and plastic is bad and like, why do you think women aren't demanding more of this holistic treatment? Why do we see this big push towards fertility clinics and the, AR, assisted or artificial technologies? Why aren't we like, picketing in and demanding more of a holistic treatment?
That's so funny, because I always wonder that when I have a woman who comes into the clinic asking for this type of treatment, I always ask, like, why are you here? How did you learn about this? And usually it is someone who has gotten to a dead end and realized the lie that many of us believe about fertility, that we can take it for granted and that it is a disease. Because most doctors, I shouldn't say most doctors, most OBGYNs, when you go into the office for an annual, they will offer some sort of birth control as if it is really good. It's good for a woman for whatever reason. Whether it's acne, whatever it is. But, we have to remember and back up and say that, birth control pills are really, that was the first technology kind of came out in the 60s. That's the first time in medicine where we offered something to someone who was healthy, something to make them sick, and then call that good. So something's really off about that. And we can certainly, I have certain ideas about just the culture and how we got to that point. But we just believed that shutting off fertility, ovulation, something so just important for a woman's whole entire being, mind, body, soul, everything, somehow we bought the lie that that was okay to do. And it's simply, it's not. And so what we've done is we've created, so many women who have ovulation disorders, infertility, and then we then take it upon ourselves in the medical system. Okay, well, we've got to find a way to fix this. So then IVF was created. So we have an artificial kind of weird way of shutting down fertility when it's not wanted. So then we have the answer to that, which is this manipulative technology that would somehow promises to just to fix and to help women to have fix problems and help women to have babies. And it's just all too much.
Yeah.
Like, we need to get back to the basics.
Yeah.
And then we have a really just, you know, and I could go on for a long time on this, but we don't even understand that sex and babies go together anymore.
I want to stop you there because you mentioned, you know, birth control and how we think we can stop fertility and, you know, turn the faucet on and turn it off, sorry, and then turn it back on. So what about even, let's go like one step further. So I'm in the Silicon Valley and this big new thing with new companies that they're offering is, and that we're seeing advertisements for, is egg freezing, that we can preserve our fertility now. So now, you know, we can stop it or we can modify it with birth control, and then we can, you know, stop taking birth control and hope to get pregnant if that's your wish or whatever. But now we're even able to preserve it. Is this just another lie that we're telling women?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We are just being, women are treating themselves as objects, and we are allowing ourselves to be manipulated by technology. And it really needs to stop. We need to wake up and learn about our bodies, appreciate our bodies, and realize that all of this manipulation is really going to make us sick in the long term. It's really not good for women. It's not good for children. It's not good for families. But unfortunately, you know, it makes sense. It's the trajectory we've been on for a long time. So it's no surprise. It's no surprise, but it's just, you know, discouraging.
For sure. In the space we work, we actually just, it's been over a year now since we released our film, Big Fertility, where we kind of talk about the fertility industry is kind of under the lens of like big pharma, you know? So you talked about back to the basics, and we kind of forget that pregnancy is achieved or, you know, through a man and a woman. And as a labor and delivery nurse, I'm certainly overwhelmed every time I'm in a delivery, and it's the most beautiful thing. And I've attended hundreds of births, and I've never not been amazed or awed or delighted. And it reminds me though, like, I also have a background in reproductive physiology, and I know how miraculous really it is for a woman to become pregnant and all of the things that kind of have to go right and the timing of things. Do you want to speak to that and kind of just kind of inform our audience about actually like how integrated this process is and how our bodies work?
Yes. So it truly is a miracle. Ovulation is a miracle. I think one of my favorite things that I love about a woman's body, there's so many things, but that I've learned, is that how smart the hypothalamus is. That's the master gland in the brain that kind of looks at everything happening, all the energy output, if you will, the triage center, you know, and looks at what's happening in the adrenals, the thyroid, you know, of course, the ovaries, how all of this goes together. And really every month is asking that question, do we have what we need to make a baby? In other words, do we have what we need to ovulate? And it's going to be different every month because our ovulation is an extremely energy, expensive in terms of energy, that this process. So what happens is there's a dominant follicle that's kind of chosen at the beginning of the cycle, right around the period, after the period. That follicle makes a bunch of estrogen. Estrogen rises. It has its effect on the woman's brain. Everything in her physiology is affected by this. But when estrogen affects the cervix of a woman's uterus, it causes this abundant watery mucus to be made, which acts as the superhighway for sperm to get to the egg. So it's this amazing thing that happens. But then after that egg is released, it only lives 12 to 24 hours. It's amazing that anybody gets pregnant. This is such a rare occurrence, it seems. And then after this egg is released, the ovary gets to work making a bunch of hormones, especially this powerful hormone called progesterone, whose job it is to prepare that lining for either a healthy period or a healthy pregnancy. And so each one of these steps can be thwarted by stress, disease, anything, any threat to the woman's body, it can all be changed. So it is truly amazing that a woman can get pregnant. There's so many different complex things happening that can dampen her ability to ovulate. And when a woman is ovulating and healthy, there are going to be a lot of signs that that's happening. But the opposite is true. When she's not ovulating well, there are going to be signs and she's not going to feel good. And she's going to complain of things that do need to be addressed.
Yeah, it's a pretty intricate cycle. And it's one that kind of amazes me, which is why I studied it. But and of course, we're really focusing on women. That's your expertise. But of course, there's also the male component to all this, which we won't go into, but it also is really important, right? So I want to take a step back and go back to your personal story and talk about IVF a little bit more, if you'll allow me. You talk in your article about how fear kind of kept driving your decisions instead of logically thinking about the risks of IVF for you and your prospective children. As a woman and a physician, can you talk about those risks that you talk about and the fear that drove you, the risks to women or babies either?
Yes, yes. There's a lot to both. So I'll just say that I don't think I was properly told of the risks. I was told that I had less than a 5% chance of having, let's say this, I was definitely told I had a less than 5% chance of having multiple births. That cycle, it was very effective, the treatment cycle. There were at least 20 embryos created somewhere up there. And three embryos were put back into my uterus during that cycle, and all three initially became implanted and began growing and seen on ultrasound. And so I remember when the doctor came to tell us that there were three, and he really was he was upset. He was visibly upset because that's not something, it sounds good, you know, oh, the more the merrier. But we know that the risks of any pregnancy conceived with IVF is higher. Almost everything that could happen that could go wrong in a pregnancy is more risky and more likely to happen in a multiple pregnancy. So we really were all just, there was a lot of, you know, again, fear came back because, oh my goodness. And then I had this rare, I don't know how rare it is actually. I wish I had the numbers of how often it happens, but I was told it was very rare. Ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome, very sick in the hospital initially because of the stimulation that I had received, the amount of drugs. So I could have died from that. I was hospitalized and I was very, very, very dehydrated and sick from that. So that's a risk. Again, you're giving this one size fits all dose of very strong ovulation inducing drugs to all women with IVF. And it's simply not smart to do so. But I don't think they figured out how to, because they want success. So they just want to give you the biggest amount. So ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome is a risk. And then you have the risk of now this triplet pregnancy for me and for many women. This is scary. My body was not really made for triplets. I don't think. I mean, I'm sure it's possible that. And so then all three of those embryos had beneath their sac subchorionic hemorrhages, which threaten any pregnancy. And so one of the embryos died at 9 weeks because of that hemorrhage. And then the two growing pregnancies, the pregnancy was threatened the entire time. I was on bed rest the entire time. So I basically missed a year of my life, you know, and the fear just multiplied. Right. Every time you would go back to get an ultrasound, I was afraid, oh, did I lose another one? Did I lose another one? So I think that when you sign up for IVF, when you say yes to IVF, it's just a huge unknown that's so much more than any pregnancy you could sign up for. So for example, if that third pregnancy had, the third baby in the pregnancy had continued to grow, at some point, they probably would have asked me if I wanted to do a selective reduction, which means it's basically an abortion. Now, how can a woman make that kind of decision?
Right. That would be incredibly difficult.
Incredibly. And not to mention after, you know, at some point, I don't remember honestly, at some point after I knew I was pregnant, I had to make a decision what to do. We had all these embryos left over. Many of them were discarded because they didn't meet certain criteria And then five were frozen for later. And so, you know, just fast forward, I have one child born from that pregnancy that was 4 years later. So she survived and four did not. So that's just a lot. Like, who's prepared to make all these decisions?
Really heavy decisions too.
Heavy. Like,
this is really, you know, life or, you know, yes. life or death, depending on how you view yes. sort of life, you know.
And I just want to say this, that the stats tell us, the statistics tell us that there are 4.2 embryos are lost or discarded for every one baby born through IVF. So it's a highly abortive technology. So I personally am not, you know, I would never, especially in my days of being infertile and wanting so much to be a mom, I would have never considered myself pro-abortion in my own body. But yet, that's exactly what I did.
Yeah. I'm just going to sit there for a second because this is a lot. And I want our listeners to really digest things that are being said.
It's heavy.
Yeah. I can't imagine navigating the heartbreak of infertility. I have friends who are infertile or who have struggled with it, only to have the sadness of losing a child on top of that. So you are struggling with infertility, perhaps you get pregnant, and then you lose that child. Just mountains of loss. Is that more common than is portrayed in IVF treatments, this kind of loss stacked on top of loss? Because we hear a lot about success stories, which are great, right? I want people to have success and have the things that they want. Does this happen more than what's portrayed?
Well, on top of the statistic I gave you earlier, another one is over 80% of all embryos created during IVF are lost. But that doesn't really hit us as much as, you know, seeing a baby on the ultrasound that's lost. But we still need to realize that when we enter into those realms of IVF, we are just like playing God. Like we are getting way in over our, we shouldn't be creating life to destroy it and destroying life to create it. And all these crazy things, we're not capable of handling the gravity of that if we're honest with ourselves. And so, yes, there's a lot of loss out there and a lot of grief that isn't being talked about in people who go down that road.
You hit on these statistics and kind of danced around success of IVF. And it seems like IVF has taken off exponentially since its creation, right? And in your opinion, then, I think I know the answer to this based on your other answers, but I'll ask anyway, is IVF then as successful as the advertisements portray? And have these success rates gotten any better since its creation?
You know, no, IVF does not serve women in general. I mean, really, first of all, who can afford it? $20,000, and that's just a basic bare minimum. So I don't know too many people who just have that money laying around.
Right.
So it doesn't really serve most women who have problems with getting pregnant. I read from a Dr. Thomas Hilger's book, Blinders, that's out in publication now. There are 9.5 million U.S. women who need some help with fertility, but IVF only serves less than half of 1% of those women.
That's crazy.
And when you look at it, I mean, because first of all, it's out of reach for the vast majority of women.
Sure.
And then of the women that it serves, quote unquote, you know, I think the rate is maybe 30% of women, like success rate. And they're very funny. I saw a woman, oh my gosh. Oh, this week. That's right. She went there to the IVF clinic and they did a intrauterine insemination procedure. That was the plan, to do an intrauterine insemination procedure. And they gave her all of the drugs, and they saw her eggs, her ovaries were filled with eggs. They canceled the cycle on her. Wouldn't let her go through the cycle. Wouldn't give her the, you know, whether it was IUI, whatever the, or even at home, like wouldn't give her the trigger shot. They wouldn't do anything because they were afraid that she would have, you know, multiple, like big, like nine, you know, eight or nine, which would put her then in a situation where she'd have to do selective reduction. So this is, can you imagine the emotion to go through that? So And just an aside, like Creighton, it has over 70% success rate. And just Creighton, that's outside of Napper technology. Just teaching a woman about her body. And just like the woman I told you that had had IVF and then got pregnant with a little bit of a mucus enhancer. When just teaching a woman about her body and letting her know when she's fertile, that is just an amazing help. And you add to it Napper technology. And, you know, we just have enormous success. But there are cases of, you know, where we don't have success. But we have to remember, we are not the creators of life.
It sounds like, too, with this technology, that not only does it seem like it has a higher success rate, but you're also enabling a woman to educate. And I just read a book called Half the Sky, and this has nothing to do with fertility, really, but it talks about women and educating women. And I just think that it's so powerful to educate women. And it sounds like, from what you're telling me, that these technologies do that. So it's great that they have great success rates, but it's also really great that we're empowering women, right, to know their bodies and to learn their bodies. So I appreciate that. We are getting close to being out of time. I don't want to keep you too long because I know how busy the life of a physician is, especially a mom of three. So I have a few more questions I'd like to ask. So we talked about, and again, I brought up this education component. What is one thing you think women don't understand enough about their bodies? What would you tell them?
That their cycle is a reflection of their health. So think of the cycle as a very important indicator on the dashboard of a woman's life. Right. So if she is taught a little bit about what indicators, you know, are there when she's healthy and ovulating versus which ones aren't, then she becomes an expert in her body and can ask for help when those indicators are off. You know, men don't have this superpower, if you will. They don't have these indicators, but our cycle is an indicator of whether we are healthy or not. And so learning to listen to that gets us healthier, gets us, you know, happier and more whole.
I really love that because, you know, I think women are super and we do a lot of really cool things. And I think, you know, sometimes, you know, your cycle gets a really bad rap, but I think that we need to give it a little bit more respect than we do. What would you want young women to know before they start family planning or even thinking about family planning?
Oh, that's such a good question. So I agree that women need to know and begin to appreciate their bodies way before they enter into a romantic relationship, because your body is an amazing gift, and it is just, gosh, so it's a way of, you know, we hear a lot now in the self-help world, which is good, about self-compassion, about self-care, about self-love. And so I just think that we, as moms of girls especially, you know, we help our girls to drive and to get really good grades in school and to maybe be a good dancer, or really a good soccer player. But if we do not teach her about the depths of her identity as a woman and how that is kind of manifested in her cycle, in her femininity, you know, and that's just a way of helping a woman just to be more beautiful, more self-aware, more self-compassionate, because if she waits to hear that she is good or hear that she is beautiful from someone who is maybe, gosh, not able to appreciate. So a woman can't properly be loved by a man until she loves herself. And so what happens is too often a woman knows nothing about her cycle, nothing about her body. And her mom says, oh my goodness, you're beautiful. You're turning into a woman. We need to go get you on birth control. But then what the message that sends a woman is, you don't have self-control, we have to control your body with some sort of a pill. So we're going to get rid of the cycle and the information it tells you about your health. So a woman needs to know more about her body before, you know, it is disabled by the pill.
So seek education, right? People who want to help you understand your body. And I think that's what you maybe are talking about when you talk about this authentic femininity, is like really truly knowing all about yourself as a woman, including your cycle and the reproductive parts of you that we often push aside. Well, it has been an absolute privilege to have you on the show. And I can't thank you enough for taking the time out of your very busy schedule to meet with me and to talk to our listeners. I think this has been really educational and I really appreciate your time.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure. And I just look forward to any questions, comments, but mostly just that women, I would just hope that women would hear this and be encouraged to learn more about themselves and their cycles. Yeah.
Certainly. I hope so too. I'd like to thank each and every listener and subscriber for tuning in. Our goal as ever is to create conversation, facilitate discussion, and encourage you all to think beyond the masses. Thanks for joining in.
Thanks for listening to Venus Rising. If you like our show and want to know more, check us out at cbc-network.org. Leave us a review on iTunes, too, and join us next week for another conversation on fertility, infertility, and women's reproductive health.